Welcome to another edition of the Cult.
Small viewing figures, carry on.
Yep. Show historical.
Welcome.
Yes, we may have a small but perfectly formed listenership, but it's quality, not quantity, as they say.
That's right, yes. Size doesn't matter. At least that's what my wife tells me.
That's...
Albeit through gritted teeth. Actually, I'd like more quantity, actually. I mean, who doesn't want more listeners? I mean, I know our listeners are very high-quality individuals, as we know from our interactions with them.
Well, that's very true. But, Wayne, when we started this out with Blackbeard in, I think it was 2014, we'd have been happy for one unique download.
Absolutely. Oh,
that wasn't basically both or either of mine or Wayne's mums doing it sport us, basically. Now we have thousands every month.
Literally.
It's unbelievable. I have to pinch Wayne to make sure I'm not dreaming.
Yeah, we should stop doing that. Yeah, I can tell you, those pinches get ever so tiresome after a while, every day.
I just don't want to be dreaming. You know, I can't believe it's true.
But it's all about you, listeners. Although we do enjoy it too. But so thank you. Some of you I know have been with us since the start, of course. Very touching.
Yes.
And we appreciate your continued support always. And always welcome with open arms the new listeners.
Yeah, I was just thinking Mary Blaber, who's been retweeting some of our stuff on Twitter, has probably been with us since 2014. So thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Maz.
Yeah. So to complete the intro, as usual, it's presented with myself, Matt Nelson, the master of the coin, and Wayne Bridgman, the food taster to Fidel Castro, the man with the most assassination attempts on in life in, I think, in recent history, actually. Is that cool?
Not a happy time, really. I mean, I shouldn't have taken the job, to be honest. He was ate a lot of food, the man did.
Do you like good food, or was he...
No, it was a bit surprising, actually, because he loved McDonald's.
For such an anti-American, it was...
And would often sort of finish up the meal with a sort of a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Yeah. Did you ever have to chug on his cigar? And that's not a euphemism, listeners. That's not a euphemism for something else.
No, that's contractual.
So, on to this week's episode. Strap on your six-shooter, your leather chaps, your Stetson hat, and spray yourself down. I've obviously dropped the bad accent now for the next bit. Thank God for that. Spray yourself down from head to toe in a can of foul-smelling body odor sweat.
Don't need it.
And let's give it a yee-haw and head off to the North American West. Yeah.
Well, what a time. Well, I don't know if they actually did that often. I think that was probably just the
let's hope they never did
guys,
it when they were trying to surprise anybody. Otherwise, they'd have given their the art of surprise
awful
away.
Awful ambushes, weren't they? But it was for the cattle, of course, wasn't it? Get them moving.
Yes, of course. I imagine. There we go. There's a historical... almost fact. I'm trying to look at Wayne, see if he just made that one up. Worth looking into, listeners.
So let's look at this time then. Where are we? It was a time of gamblers, listeners.
Two fat ladies, 88.
No.
Legs 11.
No, the stakes were much higher than bingo match.
Oh, right, okay.
There were lives on the line at some of the card games. Knockout whist.
Oh, yeah, okay. And rummy.
Rummy, that sort of thing.
Chase the ace.
21. Snap.
Liar.
No, the only things that were snapping was the sound of bullets ricocheting past people's ears.
Nice ad lib.
Because there were gunslingers there, Matt. Lots of them.
Of course they were, it was, of course, the Wild West.
Yeah, it's crazy. And in that environment, what would you also get? You'd also get legendary lawmen.
Of course you did. Otherwise it'd be a wild, wild, wild place with no law at all.
A wild, barely controlled West. But it was a time when, let's just say, if you were in the law enforcement business, it was simpler times and often far more brutal than the current times we live in. Evidence was flimsy at best for those poor people who may have been accused of a felony incorrectly. And it was down to that lawman to give out instant justice And you could find yourself, being innocent, Matt, end up being, well hung, in fact.
Well, I must be really guilty
makes
then.
Makes a nice change, will you?
Yeah, well, that's what the ladies say.
No, not no, hung from a rope.
Oh.
A noose, Matt.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought you were giving me a compliment there. I was thinking,
No, from a makeshift gallows, this would be, in the town centre.
Right, so hung like strung up, like hung.
That sort of thing.
Hanged, yeah.
With a baying crowd. Yeah. A time when, listeners, when badge-wearing, gun-toting lawmen became literally legends in their own time.
Spectacular shootouts entered the annals of history. Hollywood movies were made later. Wyatt Earp, of course, and the the shootout at the OK Corral. This was a time when steely-nerved criminals and lawmen would stand facing each other in a tense silence, 10 paces apart, waiting for the words "draw" to be shouted, possibly by a bank clerk. Or somebody of officialdom.
We've got a shootout.
Yeah.
We can't do it without one.
We need somebody with sort of spectacles and a black sack beside them and maybe an overall to call it. Then faster than Speedy Jack, winner of last year's annual Reflex Award, the gunman would draw. And, well, only one of them walked away.
Even if they both missed?
Well,
we've got 6 shots, I suppose.
These guys were crack shots, Wayne. Crack shots.
Well, I think I'd be a crack shot at 10 paces away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I wonder, Matt, thanks for that intro, but I wonder what it would have been like being in that street, seeing this, experiencing this happen, you know, the energy. The
bravery of it all as well, you know.
Yeah, what drama.
It is so close that you can't miss, so it is... Balls.
Right.
It takes balls.
Okay, well, let's go back now then. Let's step back in time and relive the... now, sit down, listeners. Right. If you're holding anything valuable or delicate, please put it to one side now.
It may be worth pulling over if you're on the road. And
pull over, please do, yes.
You know, because this could be very realistic.
Yeah, so we're going to go back in time now and relive the tension. The tension of a duel now. Here we go. Okay, now take your 10 paces, and when I say draw, you turn and shoot, boys. Okay?
Yeah, no worries, man.
Okay. Walk! Well, I've got to be honest, I think that works probably better as visual than audio. But trust me, listeners, it was really very, very tense for Matt and I here.
Yeah, really tense. I mean, the look in, certainly that older one-eyed Mexican's
face. The Mexican guy, yeah.
I mean, fair, the Mexican guy, man. That was something. I'll not forget that for a long time. In fact... I think if I go to bed tonight, I'll be thinking about his face, actually.
Yes,
listeners, you'd have really like that as a visual. But
like
it's,
a man with a moustache.
Yeah, yeah. Freddie Mercury. Right, okay. Outlaws became folk heroes. Myths of these people portrayed them sometimes far better or far worse than they really were. Welcome, listeners, to the Old West. Extending the US frontier... was like opening Pandora's box. Opening huge opportunities like new technology and enormous social change as people headed west to seek adventure and future, often from pretty awful existences in their own environments.
Yeah.
If you were, exactly if you were, you know, for example, a migrant. And with... the honest citizen came, of course, the cheeky street urchins and, the class A criminal stroke scum of the earth as well.
That's right. Well, con men, traded land they didn't own, for example, in these times.
Cheeky mines, little buggers.
Yeah, mines that didn't exist were often sold and then resold.
Enron, anybody?
That's right, that sort of thing going on there. And cattle are bought from rustlers rather than respectable businessmen.
Well, exactly.
They don't know.
So the rustlers were stealing the cattle. And they were selling it on.
Yeah. Otherwise, what's the point in stealing it, really?
Knocked off goods. There's got to be a joke about knocked off goods and cattle. I don't know, but I can't think of one.
Gamblers cheated, as you might expect.
Oops.
Thieves, they robbed banks.
Of course.
As you might expect again. Trains and stagecoaches, too, were robbed.
At will.
Yeah. You had freelance gunmen out there, Matt. The dreaded gunslingers,
of course. Yes, of course. Everybody's scared of those, yeah.
They'd kill for, well, who'd ever pay them enough to.
They'd unload onto anyone who paid them enough. We were not going to go with the obvious joke there, listeners. I'm sure you're already ahead of us on that one. And you should be ashamed of yourself, actually, for even entertaining such a line of thought.
Now, Matt,
actually, we're quite proud of you for that.
Amidst the backdrop of all this chaos, enter the lawman, bringer of law to the lawless, and justice to the. Can you guess who they're bringing justice to, Matt?
Could it be Jeff?
No, it's the unjust in general.
Oh, okay.
Although I can't rule out that one of them may have been called Jeff.
Yeah.
So, safe assumption,
listeners.
Criminals like, of course, as you know, listeners, the old JJ.
Good old JJ.
Billy the Kid, probably a more famous one.
Yeah.
And the notorious Arizona Cowboys. They were overnight sensations, these guys.
But equally legendary were Wyatt Earp, Bat Matterson, Pat Garrett, of course. So we won't be going into Pat Garrett, listeners, in this podcast. We've covered him off in Billy the Kid, of course, previous podcast of ours. But far from the clean-cut image like the film Shane and High Noon, the difference between cops and robbers wasn't always as clear as it might seem. If you're a fan of the spaghetti westerns, think of the characters like Clint Eastwood or Lee Van Cleef in A Few Dollars More, or the sequel, of course, A Fistful of Dollars.
Right, yeah. They weren't these perfect, guys, were they? Any
means. Yeah. The question is, were these guys criminals themselves?
Well, interesting
It was
question.
But a badge that changed their view.
Yes, is the answer to that. In a lot of cases, yes. But not all cases. Not all cases, of course. Some did blur the line somewhat, shall we say, between lawman and lawbreaker. They tiptoed on the knife edge of the law.
Yes.
You could say. For example, Doc Holliday, you may know Doc, before becoming a US Marshal, was a dentist.
His prices were criminal. Maha, boom, boom, boom.
That's what you get for going private.
Yeah.
Holliday is remembered as Wyatt Earp's loyal and close friend, Doc Holliday, entering the OK Corral out of loyalty specifically to him in that deadly shootout, of course.
Yes, of course.
But to paint a different picture of Doc, he was also an abusive alcoholic. So, okay, still no problem there for a lawman. Yeah. And already, he'd been accused of killing 12 people.
Hello! That doesn't sound like that. Well, presumably, we're thinking these people are thieves, but they may not be, of course.
He's accused
of killing people. That doesn't sound like he was the right side of the law. But,
dishing out justice himself at the point of a gun. So, how lawful were these lawmen in reality, then? What standards should we be judging people like Doc Holliday on? After all, the men that lived in the West were products of their environment, their very harsh environment, of course, and so were going to be as deadly as those deadly people that they hunted.
And bravery was a key attribute for these sheriffs or rangers. When the brown stuff hits the fan and Joe Public needs help from the boys with the shiny badge, he better make sure the guy with the badge is not too busy soiling his underpants to make any use or be any practical help whatsoever.
There's a very good reason they all wore brown leather trousers.
Exactly.
Wash off, wipe clean.
Wipe clean, and the BO, of course, hid the smell.
That's true.
The towns in the West were wild places and needed a sheriff that was to be so brave that he preferred to run into a bank heist, shootout, stark bollock naked, carrying his trusty Winchester rifle for company, shouting, "Drop 'em, I'm fully loaded," than be seen to hesitate for a mere second at the first sign of immediate trouble. Now let's just see how this can pan out, shall we?
Sheriff! Sheriff! What? There's a robbery in progress! The bank's been hit by the Brady Boys! Hank, Travis, and Billy Bob Jr. second!
No!
You gotta do something! Where are you, Sheriff? Where are you?
Hi, Jerry. Are you sure that's the case? I imagine it's just people making, you know, a lot of ruckus, loud withdrawal or something.
Sheriff? Are you hiding under the desk? Sheriff?
No, of course not. I was merely inspecting the underside of the desk when the explosion was off, you know, to see
Damn.
If there were any spider webs here. Oh, okay. So, no webs in sight. That's a relief. Germaphobe. How are your family?
Sheriff! Huh? The bank's been robbed! We can't stay in here talking! I can see them going into the bank back and forth stacking bags of loot! You gotta stop him now! Stop him, Sheriff!
Of course I do, Jerry. Now, first I need to report this, okay? We gotta do this properly. I need to report this in writing. You know, documented evidence of what you've seen. Very important we get it all down.
I can see the man that fucking tuning paper.
I gotta write this down before I can spring into action. I know it's bureaucracy. Seems to have bureaucracy, Jerry, but
oh, damn. There's no time, sir. I can see there, Hank Brady. He's there soon, the man. Oh, my God. He's killed him. He's killed him. Oh, you gotta stop me, Sheriff. You gotta stop me.
Jerry, they have guns? Jesus, I mean, someone could get hurt. Guns kill, you know.
Sheriff!
I have it. We need to respond immediately.
Thank God there's still time.
Okay, Mary Lou, I want you to make an immediate dictation. Immediate, okay? Here we go, right. So, send to the neighbouring town of Harry Roseville. Ready? Dear Cousin Thomas, require... immediate, I repeat, immediate, that's immediate, support for bank robbery, in brackets, parentheses, currently in progress. Okay, please, at your earliest convenience, send support. Love to Morris and the kids, your sheriff and friend, Yellow Pete. All right.
They shot Indian Joe. He was trying to stop them, they just gone gunned down.
They're murderers. Someone needs to stop them, Jerry.
That's your job, man. That's your job,
yes.
Sheriff.
Yes,
come
I know.
On.
I know.
Come
I know.
On.
I mean, I should stop them. Okay, let's go. Let me get my rifle.
Thank God. There's still time. Oh, there's still time. What? Sheriff, are you okay?
Oh, no. Jerry, not going to believe this. I've only gone and tripped over the step. Twisted my ankle knee.
Oh, damn.
Ankle. I've twisted my ankle. I'm afraid I'll just have to lay here and I'm not going to be able to come. Curse my bad luck.
Oh, you bloody useless, man. Right, I'll have to go do this myself. Hey! Grab the money, you bunch of hooligans!
Dramatic.
Yeah.
It was dramatic.
Yeah. It just goes to show the importance of bravery.
Yeah. Well, the second half of the 19th century saw mass migration.
Mass,
course,
it was. Mass.
Huge. Westward.
Westward ho!
huge cattle ranches blossomed. Cattle rustling and horse theft, therefore, became very profitable, of course, for those willing to risk being captured and... imprisoned, or even worse, hung.
Yes.
So facing a criminal crime wave, local law enforcement faced many problems, of course. There were no radios,
yeah,
no phones.
No cars, of course.
Exactly. Firstly, Norman in these sort of these new fledgling towns were very poorly staffed, poorly paid, whilst facing both outlaws, guns, and criticism from town officials and bean counters.
Mm-hmm.
If they were too weak or too heavy-handed, you can't win.
Sounds like a thankless task.
Well, you'd be right, because it is a thankless task.
Yeah.
In short, it was almost impossible to get the right balance and be successful as a lawman. Pretty much like your typical football coach today, Matt.
What's more, their jurisdiction was limited. This is ridiculous.
Still a problem
when I read this.
In some US states, yeah. This one, yeah.
Anyone could break the law, then cross the nearest county line
mm-hmm.
and be safe from arrest and prosecution. But the hapless local sheriff couldn't cross the line, leaving the lawman unable to follow.
I will come straight out here and say that is a ridiculously stupid law.
It is. As the character Dark Helmet states in the 1980s film Spaceballs,
yeah.
Evil wins because good is stupid.
Wise words. With if you haven't seen that movie,
I love that film.
Go and watch it; it's hilarious.
It was good. It was good.
Spaceballs.
Of course, if you're a Star Wars fan, it's Lone Star.
Yes.
What
right.
was John Candy's character called? Barf, I think.
Barf.
It was Barf. It was Chewbacca,
yeah.
But it was Barf.
Yeah,
yeah.
Stole the show. He looks like a, sort of like a big dog, basically.
Yeah.
So, we digress again. With established law often unavailable, not readily anyway, and its enforcers often corrupt, I'm afraid the job lent itself to corruptness.
As we said, thankless task.
The populace would often enforce their own rules, Matt. Three dreaded words. Two of them together. Here are the two. Lynch mobs.
Yeah,
and the other one, vigilantes.
Ooh, what a nasty three. Ooh.
Just as bad for the good guys, in some cases, as it was for the bad. So that sort of frontier justice often involved prisoner, check, length of rope, tick.
Sorted.
And nearest available tree. Tick.
Tick, yeah.
Without stern law enforcers, mobs even took prisoners from jails solely to hang them on high, as they used to say. Sort of like a very, as we're coming up to the season, a bit like, if you look around you, listeners, if you've got any early Christmas decorations up, a bit like a macabre sort of Christmas Santa hanging from the tree.
Maybe as you sat there with your kids in December and you're looking at your Christmas tree, just pretend, instead of Christmas decorations that hang off it, a dead vigilantes or dead lawbreakers.
Dead criminal.
Just
criminal.
Men hanging off your Christmas tree.
And while you're imagining that...
That's a nice festive thought.
if you're seeing as you are imagining it, just remember that they've probably soiled themselves as well.
The smell.
Because the bowels and et cetera, that lets go when they die. So...
Happy Christmas,
Merry Christmas
folks.
To all.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas. Facing a breakdown in law and order, state and national organizations were needed. The Texas Rangers, the Northwest Mounted Police, and the U.S. Marshals and the Pinkerton Detective Agency made their name in this time and are still known actually today.
Couldn't they have got a better name though?
Pinkerton.
Pinkerton detective. It doesn't sort of inspire.
It was Mr. Pinkerton.
Good reason.
He was a man. Yeah. It wasn't purely that they chose pink as the colour they thought would scare people. It was merely his name.
Okay, fair enough.
But let's start with the US Marshals.
Yes. Started in 1789, right through to now, present day. They are still relevant today. About as relevant today as Wi-Fi is to a 10-year-old.
Well, my son certainly would say that's relevant.
That's very relevant. The U.S. Marshals Service is America's oldest law enforcement body. In fact, founded during George Washington's presidency. So right at the start. And many marshals have become legends, such as Wyatt Earp. Come on, you all know him.
Oh, good old Wyatt.
His brothers, Virgil Earp and Morgan Earp. And, of course, our favourite old nutjob, Doc Holliday. Bat Masterton, I think you mentioned Bat.
Yeah.
Dallas Stoudemire, that's a great name. And Baz Reeves, cheeky chap. All legends in their own underpants.
Or, of course, leather chaps, as was worn in the day. So, famous places like Dodge City, Tombstone, Abilene, and Deadwood are all famous towns for murder and mayhem. Saw justice served with the old six-shooter and the shotgun. Ouch. You hear that noise, listeners? That was my elbow on the table.
Getting a bit over.
Yes, I was getting excited there and beginning to gesticulate like a madman. Unlike state and local police, the US Marshals had national jurisdiction.
They did. They could arrest over the county line. That means, doesn't it? Yeah.
And any state or county without its own lawman could actually request a US Marshal to come and support them.
Very useful.
So, you know, it's a call in the A-team, so to speak. Feared by outlaws, they often enforce the law using an old Frank Hammer's method.
Oh, yeah.
What is that, of course? It's a .45 to the gut. Oof. Or, if they were a particularly good shot, to the good old testes.
Balls eye.
The most famous marshal, of course, is undoubtedly Wyatt Earp.
Yep.
The most famous of the Earps, of course, and his feud with the Arizona Cowboys.
Notorious,
gang,
wasn't it?
Yeah, the notorious Arizona Cowboys. Is now legendary and led to the gunfight at the OK Corral.
And what a gunfight it was.
It's become part of American folklore and has been made actually into about at least three films I've seen.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen enough films, to be honest. Three films on it is enough.
Well,
but it is good.
Glorifying violence Tombstone, to its utmost, isn't it?
Yeah.
However, unlike the Kevin Costner version of Earp, Earp Sr. was not a clean-cut chap, actually. He did not have a perpetual halo hovering a foot above his well-groomed head, or go around quoting lines from the Bible whilst dispatching villains like a pumped-up version of Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction. Not at all.
Give it up, Big Bap McFadden! You have nowhere to go!
I got me six reasons to say go screw yourself up. Eat lead!
That ends the reign of Big Bat McFadden. As the Lord says, now cometh, go and strike Amalek, and devote to destruction all that they have. Do not spare them, but kill both man, woman, child, and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey.
So... was that actually a quote?
Yep, Samuel, the first Samuel 15.3. Yeah, it's kind of genocide-y, isn't it?
It does have a genocide-y taste.
Yes, even the ox and the camel don't get spared.
Yeah, and well, why should they?
Yeah.
The humans don't. Well, despite that quote, Earp was in fact no saint. Saint, in no way whatsoever. Because, as the saying goes, birds of a feather flock together. Right.
Yeah, got it.
Get it? Or, how about this one? To catch a killer, you need to be a killer.
No?
Or, as Matt here says, not in the face! Not in the face!
Well, you have to look after your looks, Wayne. Well, or look after themselves.
Hey, I moisturise.
Yeah.
Right, so, anyway. Wyatt Earp, a bit of a rogue, and wasn't really that clean-cut American hero.
Hold the front page!
Though I think a lot of people would like him to be, you know. You might expect he worked as a bouncer. He actually did work as a bouncer.
Yeah.
So it's easy to explain away as a good grounding for his sort of like his line of work that he got into.
But harder to explain away is that he ran a group of ladies and was a pimp.
He was?
He made his living renting out the company of ladies to desperate men.
Well, I suppose he did. He did wear a sort of wide brimmed hat, doesn't he?
He did, yeah.
He had a sort of a leopard skin suit.
And maybe his horse was like pimped out with loads of like it actually bobbed up and down as he rode into town like a pimped up car or something. And he was known as a gambler, mind you, who wasn't a gambler in those days.
Oh, yes.
But Earp crossed the line between criminal, lawman, and eventually vigilante, and had a vendetta ride against the notorious cowboys. So let's learn a bit more about this most famous lawman and his shootout at the OK Corral.
Yeah, okay, well, it's 1881, wasn't it? Yeah. 1881, it's 1881.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
The Earp brothers face off against the Clanton McClory gang.
The Arizona Cowboys.
Got a Celtic route, it seems. In a legendary shootout at the OK Corral. Come on, listeners, do you need me to tell you where it is? OK Corral. Tombstone, Arizona.
Arizona.
After silver was discovered nearby in 1877.
There'd be silver in those hills.
Tombstone quickly grew into one of the richest mining towns in the southwest. Of course, when everyone was heading west, that's how a lot of towns grew up. There's obviously, there was a natural resource there, or there was a gold rush, or something like that. That's how Tombstone grew up.
Yeah, where there's money, people will follow.
Yeah. Weisserp, at the time, was a former Kansas police officer, ex-pimp by this time, and he was working as sort of a strong-arm bank security guard guy. And his brothers, Morgan and Virgil, they were the town marshals at the time, represented, in inverted commas, law and order in Tombstone. Though they also had reputations as being, let's just say, a little bit power-hungry, and let's just say, ruthless sons of bitches.
That's definitely getting off the fence with that one. The Clanton's McCleary's gang were cowboys who lived on a ranch outside of the town and sidelined as cattle rustlers, thieves and murderers.
Quite a CV.
So, in October 1881, the struggle between the two groups to control Tombstone sort of was really kicking off. The Wyatt Earps gang, the Earps, and these cowboys, right? And it escalated to the point that it ended in a blaze of gunfight at the OK Corral. So, what happened on the day of the OK Corral?
Well, it was the morning of October 25. Ike Clanton and Tom McClory came into Tombstone for some supplies. And over the next 24 hours, the two men had, let's just say, several violent run-ins.
So, for example, they could have been walking down the street, giving an icy stare to the Earp boys, or jostling past them in the bar, accidentally spilling their drinks, you know, maybe pushing an arm out.
Maybe spitting out a bit of chewing tobacco in their path.
Maybe criticising the Earps on their choice of clothing. Mm. Or perhaps criticising their moisturising routine.
Yeah, yeah.
Handbags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deadly stuff. Well,
yeah, around, really naughty.
around 1:30 in the afternoon, on October the 26th now, the next day, Ike's brother Billy rode into town to join the other boys.
Yeah.
Along with Frank McClory and a chap called Billy Claiborne. So we've got 5 now of these cowboys in total in this town. The first person they met at the local saloon, of course, saloon being a sort of a drinking hole, pub type affair.
Yeah.
Was a rather intoxicated Doc Holliday, who, as we mentioned earlier, was a close friend of the Earps, of course. Doc Holliday, in his drunken southern drawl, was supposed to informed, and delighted in doing so, in fact, that their brothers had both been pistol-whipped by the Earps.
So pistol-whipping, of course, is where you shoot your pistol at the foot of the people, and they have to dance up and down.
Make them dance.
Yeah, make them dance for dances. So, he was making it up, actually, wasn't he?
It's basically a slight, you know, saying you're cowards, you know, they were doing this and you didn't do anything. And so Frank and Billy immediately left the saloon, not too happy.
You wouldn't be. You would think their brothers had been, you know, their honour had been impugned.
Although they did leave. I mean, let's not forget Doc Holliday was an imposing looking guy. He was a tough guy, but as they did leave, they vowed revenge to themselves. So that hadn't happened.
The pistol whipping, he was just making up in a little drunken
But it was a definite nonsense. Attempt to insult these guys, and this white lie, little white lie, as is so often the way, listeners, remember, lies are bad, because this little lie lit the fuse that was to ignite the entire shoot off.
So around 3 p.m. the three Earps and Holliday spotted the 5 members of the Clanton McCleary gang in a vacant lot behind the OK Corral. At the end of Fremont Street, this is where the OK Corral was.
Ooh.
The famous gunfight that ensued lasted all of 30 seconds.
Something like the day I lost my virginity.
And
scouts were happy times.
And around 30 shots were fired.
Only one shot was fired that day.
Though it's still debated who fired the first shot.
I know I did.
Back on message, Wayne.
Sorry.
Most reports say that the shootout began when Virgil Earp pulled out his revolver and shot Billy Clanton point blank in the chest.
That'll do it.
While Doc Holliday then fired a shotgun blast at Tom McCleary's chest. The wounded Frank McCleary with a shot in the stomach, Frank managed to get off a few shots before collapsing, as did Billy Clanton. While the dust cleared, Billy Clanton and the McCleary brothers were dead. Wow. Virgil and Morgan Earp and Doc Holliday were wounded.
Ooh.
Ike Clanton and Caliborne had managed to scarper out of there pronto.
Wow, that's quick, isn't it? Yeah, so Sheriff John Behan of Cochise County, he witnessed the shootout. He charged the Earps and Holliday with murder, as you might.
Which seems fair,
you
right?
You can't really blame him here, can you? And
they shot first, and they also shot point blank.
Yeah, on the face of it, it looks totally fair. Because Virgil shot first, like you say, at point blank range. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is starting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a month later, however, a tombstone judge found the men not guilty.
Very suspicious, that is.
Ruling they were fully justified in committing these homicides, and also probably quite well loaded with money as well, presumably.
I smell a rat.
I smell some cash.
Yeah, changing hands, something along those lines.
The famous shootout has been immortalised in many movies, as Matt said. We've got Frontier Marshal in 1939. I'm afraid I haven't seen it. I can't vouch for it. Gunfight at the OK Corral, 1957. Sounds old, but it's a classic.
Again, not seen it.
Not seen it. And Tombstone. That's the more recent one in 93.
Now, I have seen that. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah, Val Kilmer and Doc Holliday.
Well, people were loving it at that time. Because the next year, 94, they brought out something called White Earp.
That was the Kevin Costner one.
The Costner one. And that, of course, all those films are common in that they show the lawmen as brave heroes. Although, you know, we're not convinced that's the case.
The Cowboys gang was quite large, though. So the other members naturally sought revenge on the Earp brothers for their fallen comrades. This resulted in an attack that maimed Virgil Earp, and ambush that killed Morgan Earp. In response, Wyatt, now a US Marshal, formed a federal posse and went after the culprits in what would be known as Earp's Vendetta Ride.
Ooh, dramatic. The posse rode from about March 20th until April 15th, 1882. So they're really onto this. Tracking down the Cowboys. In Tucson, Arizona, of course, they killed Frank Stillwell, one of the suspects in Morgan's murder. However, the highlight of the ride was a large shootout near Iron Springs on March 24. The posse came upon nine members of the Cowboys, including William Brocius,
a.k.a. Curly Bill.
Presumably because of his hair.
We'd hope so.
Another participant in Morgan Earp's assassination, that chap.
Curly Bill saw the posse approaching and was the first to fire his shotgun at Wyatt. But he missed. Earp fired back and hit Bill square in the chest. Bang! Killing him instantly. What followed was, I wasn't trying to glorify it, listeners. I was trying to add some excitement.
That's some mother's son.
That's some mother's son. This poor guy. He was only defending himself. What followed was a gunfight between the two factions, basically. But nobody else was killed except for a horse called Dave, belonging to one of the lawmen.
The horse was actually called Dave.
Texas Jacks. That's the horse, great. Of course, wasn't called Dave.
Oh, that's a shame.
That would be ridiculous. Really, really stupid. Actually, he was called Archibald Theobald Wilbert the First.
Ah, much better. Excellent.
It's a more traditional horse's name.
Yes, that's more like it. Okay. So, that's the brief story of Wyatt Earp. Now, we mentioned a few of the other famous lawmen that formed the US Marshals. We've got the Three Guardsmen. Very noble-sounding name.
Feels like that should be given a bit of a fanfare.
Yeah. The Three Guardsmen were credited with the apprehension of no less than 300 outlaws.
Now, that is impressive.
About 100 each. Killing quite a number of those in the process. In August 1896, they policed what was then the vast Oklahoma territory. Actually, very difficult terrain to police. Which included the Cookson Hills.
Oh, the good old Cookson Hills.
And the Seminole Nation, of course.
Of course, I've never been there, but it's the good old Cookson Hills.
Home to many outlaws like Jesse James, he was there. The Cook Brothers.
Yeah.
Crawford Cherokee Bill.
Good old Crawford, yeah.
And the dueling game.
Ah, they were brutal.
Yeah,
almost. Yeah, very brutal.
The three guardsmen handled the dreaded dueling gang simply and brutally. Members of that gang who surrendered were arrested.
Makes perfect sense. That's and what you'd expect from a lawman.
Yeah, those who resisted died. It's a very straightforward equation.
Simples. Simples. Yeah. You know, yeah. The Cook brothers also fell before the marshals, while their friend Goldsby was hanged at Fort Smith, Arkansas, in March 1896, aged only 20.
Mm.
Defiant to the end, his last words were, "I came here to die, not make a speech."
Balls as big as watermelons.
They were indeed.
It might just be simple.
He might be simple. He just wasn't very good at speeches. Maybe he got embarrassed.
Maybe he had like a terrible illness and he went there to sort of like a hospice. I came here to die. These things get misconstrued sometimes.
Of course, yeah.
So who were these three guardsmen then?
Very likely.
Henry Andrew, or Heck.
Good old Heck. Anybody called Heck. A lot. Heck's great, isn't it?
Chris Madsen, a bit more boring as a name. And Bill Tillman. You know, not that inspiring, is it? But these boys.
Oh, these boys. The three guardsmen.
So Henry, Heck, as we know him, led a posse that tracked down and wiped out outlaw Bill Doolin, the king of the gang, who'd already been captured by Tillman, actually, only to escape from prison on July the 5th, 1896. By 1902... much of Oklahoma had sort of settled down by that point, but Heck was still dispatched to a place called Lawton, where he was elected to the first police chief in the town after doing so well, actually. And he served in that rank for 7 long, dangerous, successful years, until his health began to fail, and he died in 1912. Not sure what age he was, though.
But it's interesting, isn't it, when we look at these guys, we think about the Wild West as ages ago, and 1912 he died. It
20th century.
Yeah. It really wasn't that long ago, these guys. Just, you know, 2 years before the First World War, this guy died. And had previously been rounding up, criminals.
For all you know, listeners, he might have slept with your great-great-grandmother. Something to think about.
William Matthew, or Bill Tillman, Jr., was a lawman and gunfighter during the Wild West days of Kansas and Oklahoma. As we said, this is where these guys, you know, they did their business. During his career, Tillman earned his the admiration of many gunslingers like the Earps, the Masters and Brothers, and good old Wild Bill Hickok.
Oh, Wild Bill.
Tillman developed the status of a man who only resorted, Wayne, to violence when it was absolutely essential. And I look at Wayne specifically as I say this, but was known to be deadly and efficient in its use at the last resort.
You're right.
And again, I look at Wayne here.
I am deadly efficient.
Kind of like Charles Bronson in Death Wish, actually.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's Bill Tillman and Wayne.
Yes, although I never thought that Charles Bronson was a great casting for those films, because he always just looked like sort of like someone's dad, didn't he?
Someone's dad, but
mate,
was that not the point? Anybody could be a vigilante and go, well, spastic on the
not with a tash like that.
Well, maybe not with a tash.
All right. Well, there was moving on. There was Chris Marsden too. I guess he was pretty good too. More about him in a minute or two. But Bill Tillman retired in 1910. And was elected to the Oklahoma State Senate, actually.
But why is that important? Well, tell us, Wayne.
Well, why it's important is because on Halloween night in 1924, at the age of 70, Tillman was murdered by a corrupt prohibition agent named Wiley Lind while serving as town marshal for Cromwell in Oklahoma.
Now, Cromwell at the time was a wild town full of brothels, pool halls and saloons. 1 month, though, after his death, the entire town was burned to the ground. Mm. Not a single building left. It is rumoured, and often believed pretty accurately, that Chris Madsen, the other member of the three guardsmen, and other law enforcement friends of Tillman's were believed to have been responsible.
Insurance job, was it?
But no investigations into the arsons was ever conducted. The town of Cromwell never recovered. As of the 2000 census, actually, its population was less than 300.
Oh.
No one messes, Wayne, with a free guardsman and lives to talk about it. That's the point. These guys were so hard. You may kill Tillman, but we're going to burn your town to the ground. That's what these guys were like.
Well, he's got some issues, isn't he, then, in that case?
Yeah.
A bit over the top to
well, it's a bit OTT.
Respond in that way.
It was a bit OTT. I suspect loads of innocents died in the process. Yeah. So quite sad, actually.
Okay, well.
And actually quite recent, so we shouldn't really laugh about it.
Well, Madsen, he'd retired in 1905 and died in 1944.
It's amazing,
isn't it? Seems so recent, doesn't it?
It's amazing to think that these guys were on the West fighting these people, and yeah, yet they only died, you know, in the recent past, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Although he was 93 when he died in 1944.
Good age, though, for a gunslinger.
That's right. One of their famous shootouts, well, we probably don't need to go into too much detail to explain what happened in El Paso gunfight in 1881. The gunfight included the three guardsmen and a Mexican posse. Yeah, posse sort of like a sort of a group, tight-knit group of criminals acting as one. The gunfight is simply known as the Four Dead in 5 Seconds gunfight.
Great name. Great
say,
name.
Say what you see. I'll leave it to your imagination, I think. Pretty easy, though, I think.
Respect to them. So moving on then, from the three guardsmen to Deputy US Marshal Bass Reeves. Now, he isn't as well remembered as Wyatt Earp, but he was equally remarkable. He worked mainly in Arkansas and the Indian Territory, where he learned to speak several Native American languages whilst hiding out in the tribes as a fugitive slave. Yes, that's right. Reeves was the first US Marshal west of the Mississippi River who was black.
Mm. After the abolition of slavery, Reeves joined the US Marshals in 1875 and worked with them for 32 years. During this time, he was accredited with 14 kills and an amazing 3,000 arrests.
That is crazy. 3,000 arrests. We talk about the 300 that the guardsmen, the small amount that Wyatt Earp really did. 3,000 arrests, this
guy. Unfortunately, only 4 were guilty.
He was prolific.
Awful. Awful,
he was prolific, this guy. Can you imagine how hard it must have been for him in this job after the abolition of slavery, with the example and the emergence of groups like the Ku Klux Klan and the inherent racism of the time? The bravery of this man must have been immense.
Yeah, and must have taken quite a bit of self-restraint to not have more than 14 kills in 32 years.
Oh, absolutely, right. Yeah.
One of the more notable arrests, actually, was his own son, who he brought to justice for murder. So this guy is serious.
This guy is honourable with a capital H.
Yeah, and allegedly demanding he was the one to make that arrest. He wanted to do it. He proved himself a skilled detective and marksman as well. Having spent time with the native tribes, he could converse with the natives, which gave him sort of vital intelligence about the land, and also sort of, you know, rumours that might be circulating around the area about felons who's been through the territory. Due to the fact that account saying he rode a white horse, it's rumoured to be the Lone Ranger was actually modelled on Bass. However, due to racial issues at the time,
which of course were prevalent
in America, the Lone Ranger obviously was sort of a clean-cut white chap. And we can't verify this, actually, as other lawmen have also been credited with that connection too, as you might do.
We now move away from the legendary US Marshals, I think we've covered them enough, and on to another famous group in Canada. So we move to the Northwest Mounted Police, Wayne, formed in 1873 and is still in operation today.
There you go.
They were called a police force to soothe the fears about troops building up in the Northwest American border, but then Governor General of Canada made no bones about what was expected of them. While nominally policemen, the men would be dressed in scarlet uniforms and possess all the characteristics of a military force.
Well, they were actually a military force, Matt, in all but name. But why that fetching scarlet uniform? I hear you cry out in surprise.
And possibly outrage as well, because you're thinking, it just doesn't make sense.
Well,
why be so red? And
it's
obvious?
Actually like, it's a bright red uniform, right? It's going to make them stand out like a sore thumb and might make great target practice, surely. for a gun-toting criminal amongst the...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So what was the point?
Well, now I'm going to give you a couple of clues here. So the reason they were in red was because it showed that they wanted to be seen on the field of battle. They wanted to stand up and show they didn't care. Here we are. This is us.
They were proud like cocks. Cockerels, of course, listeners, not anything else. Proud like cockerels.
No. They were modelled on the British Army. The red coats, weren't they?
If you'd merely said that before, I would have just sat back with a comfortable look on my face and went,
yes, that model of military perfection. If you've got any military guys listening out there from the UK, thank you for your service. And the Royal Irish Constabulary
Of course. They also wore it. The British Empire, which of course at this time had very close ties to Canada, had decked out its troops for centuries in the scarlet uniform. The red was actually all about being seen, as Wayne said. The presence of a red coat could send a message. Don't try any of your criminal shit today. You got a dwelling tie rag, or you'll be eating lead for the rest of your worthless, very short lives.
That's exactly what it was trying to say.
Yeah.
In fact, the phrase, the thin red line, remember? That refers to the British Army's long but narrow formation. When fighting an army, so it could bring the maximum number of muskets to bear with that wide line. You'd not want the enemy to cross the thin red line, would you? For the North West Mounted Police, they were Canada's thin red line against villains and general skullduggery and nefariousness.
And of course, you've probably guessed it, listeners, they were called the Mounties. They were a disciplined... paramilitary organisation charged with securing the Northwest Territory for the settlers. They were in a place where tough policing was seriously needed. Canada had brought the Northwest Territory from the Hudson Bay Company back in 1870 for a whopping, at that time but not now, it looks pathetically small, $1.5 million.
Bargain.
It was to be sold to the Americans, actually.
Yeah.
But the British government intervened and made sure the sale went to Canada.
Yep.
Still a bit narked off, of course, about the War of Independence, as you can imagine, so they made sure Americans didn't get it.
I'm always amazed, actually, how cheap these huge expanses of land are sold for. It seems crazy now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Remember the Louisiana Purchase,
of
course?
That was pathetic. $800,000.
Huge tract of land. That was sold to America by France for next to nothing, wasn't it?
Although
I think there was probably a bit of threat added to that. It was sort of a bit of you'll sell us to this for 800,000, won't you? Click.
Well, of course, the French at the time were the old Napoleonic War, and they could do with every single buck.
Yeah, they
every
won
single
their
franc
knees.
They could do.
Being destroyed by Wellington's army in the Peninsular War in Spain, of course, weren't they? Yeah. And on July 15th, 1870, Rupert's Land and the Northwestern Territories were ceded to Canada and became the Northwest Territories, didn't they?
Yep, that's right.
But due to regions, the sort of isolated wilderness kind of feel to the whole place, it was basically completely lawless.
As you'd expect.
And this culminated in the massacre at Cypress Hill. Hits from the barn.
You see, I was tempted to say hits at Cypress Hill. I think it did come from there, yeah. I was tempted to go hits from the barn. I'm glad you did that.
Right, someone please look that up and let us know. Is that where, is this massacre at Cypress Hill in 1873, where the name of the rap band Cypress Hill came from? Please let us know.
Yeah, please get us on Twitter on this.
Because now, this might give us a clue. So it saw a party of drunken whiskey traders. I know that Cypress Hill enjoy a bit of whiskey from time to time.
Yeah, they enjoy a lot of things. So.
They do, yeah. Bison hunters killed at least 20 Assabioni natives, claiming they'd stolen a horse. A horse called Dave?
Don't be ridiculous. It wasn't a horse called Dave. The horse was called Frederick Reginald Leopold V of Tuscany.
They have some fancy names for these horses.
They don't they?
They really like the horses.
The NWMP, or the Northwested Mounted Police, at this time was still establishing itself. And the Cypress Hill massacre acted as a catalyst for the speedy transition to react appropriately to these consequences. Time to send in the Mounties, gentlemen. But how did you get to the Northwest Territory? The answer is a grueling 1,300-kilometre march across the prairie.
That is grueling.
Was exactly what 300 Mounties endured over a two-month period to get to their new base of operations.
Why didn't they ride horses?
They did.
Called Mounties.
Oh, they did, but they had to Still had to do 1,300 kilometres.
A 1,300 kilometre horse march.
So next time you're bitching and moaning about your commute to work, Wayne, mm-hmm. and you, your listeners, you know, spare a thought for these poor lads in scarlet.
Okay, I will. Their early activities included ending the whisky trade by kicking some major whisky peddling ass.
Yoo-ha.
Enforcing agreements with the First Nation people.
The natives, the use of the word enforcing can conjure many images, none of which are unfortunately pleasant. So a bit
thud.
Of a...
thud.
And a sadness associated with that, of course. Mm.
They came down heavy-handed, actually, on the indigenous people of the region. A sad reality of the time.
Yeah.
And in 1876, the Great Sioux War saw many Native Americans migrate to the Northwestern Territories, away from that dangerous war zone.
And of course, listeners, we've covered the Sioux War briefly in the Battle of Little Bighorn podcasts with Custer and the Sitting Bull and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, where we found out that perhaps Custer had been promoted a little bit too early.
Yeah, and perhaps he was a little bit too gung-ho.
Yeah, see our episode Little Bighorn for more context on this. It was a job of the Mounties to police their stay, those indigenous guys, and make sure that law and order remained and they were well behaved.
In a few years, many Native Americans returned home, but some refused to leave. When food supplies were stopped, they endured months of starvation before surrendering to the US Army in 1881. But domestic problems, most notably the McLean brothers, who terrorised British Columbia, stealing all sorts of stuff and generally making a bloody nuisance of themselves and causing public fear. After murdering two men, including a Mountie, they were captured and hanged in Westminster in 1881.
But with one crisis over, another began.
Oh, bugger!
Yeah. but it is, don't you? It's the second real rebellion.
Yeah, of course. We didn't cover the first real rebellion, but it happened.
Yeah, this is the second one. In 1885. But the Mounties helped crush,
like a grapefruit,
the uprising of Louis Riel, the leader of the rebellion, who led natives in uprising after much bloodshed. Huge numbers, actually, were involved on both sides. There were a number of set battles, such as the Battle of Cut Knife, where 350 Mounties charged a line of defenders, a good old cavalry charge.
I mean, so it's a very different kind of policing going on in the Northwest Territory to what was going on with the US US Marshals.
Mind you, if any of you listeners want to see, you know, feel that power of all those horses charging a line of baying maniacs, I suggest you go to a Millwall football match in the UK and you'll see the police do something similar.
It's a sad state of affairs. It all went ape when the gold rush kicked off in 1895. Oh man, there is gold in them damn hills, and very specially in the Klondike region of...
Klondike, isn't it?
It's Klondike.
Klondike.
Klondike. Region of Yukon. And literally, thousands of people came sensing a get-rich chance, and with them, the dodgy criminal gangs also arrived.
They do, yes.
The Mounties were tasked with enforcing the law and customs and expelling undesirables, of course, and did such a good job that this was so peaceful. When you compare this to the American 1840s gold run in California,
chaos,
where it was crazy, as a bucket of frogs fed on just Mountain Dew for a week.
That's pretty crazy. Ultimately, it was the gold rush that saved the Mounties, as at the time, it's disbanding. They were going to disband them.
Yeah.
It's being discussed as a real thing. But the glowing reports of these heroes on horseback...
These heroes in scarlet...
They were in scarlet, they were noble, straight-backed, on horsebacks. The horses had great names. It saw the plans for their disbandment.
They weren't called Dave.
It saw the plans for their disbandment shelved. And the Mounties, as you probably know, still patrol today, standing just as erect and proud as before. Though, clearly, they're a bit more for show these days, I think, rather than practical help and cavalry charges.
So, moving on. What about a bit Chuck Norris?
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah, love a bit of Chuck Norris. We all love a bit of Chuck Norris. Of course, world champion karate on multiple occasions. Yes, the famous Texas Rangers. Well, obviously, Chuck Norris is a hard-ass, multiple karate world champ, as we said. film star and star, of course, of Walker, Texas Ranger. But he's not an actual ranger, listeners, of course. He's merely an actor pretending to be an ranger.
I knew it. Yes, he takes a script and makes words come alive.
Like magic.
It's not real. Actually, little known fact, Chuck Norris was recently given a ceremonial role as a real Texas Ranger. Can you believe that?
Bugger me senseless.
Yeah. Okay,
people. Unless you don't. Actually, that would be a humiliating way to end the podcast.
Okay, people. Stop your car. Oh, no, actually, tell you what, even better. Keep driving. Unwind the window. All right? And don't be embarrassed about this. Doesn't matter who's around. And shout at the top of your voices, one ride. What? Come on, Matt. One ride.
One ranger.
And maybe add a yee-haw.
Yee-haw!
Like that at the end of it. Get any weird looks? Feel all manly and tough? I'm guessing it felt pretty good.
Of course you do. And you'd be right too as well. It was, of course, the call the Rangers did before setting out for a ride. Oh yes, let's ride on into the Texan Plains with this famous group.
It's strange though, isn't it? One ride, one ranger. What does that mean? It's not, doesn't really inspire fear or terror.
And they probably...
I'm not a criminal, so what would I know?
And let's also think that it probably wasn't done on your own as well, because it wasn't some guy in the middle of the, you know...
Planes one ride, going, one 300 ride. Rangers.
Exactly, yeah. But I think one ranger meant, they all were one group. It was comradeship. Good old comradeship. Brethren, yeah, exactly.
Okay, so these guys are known to be both ruthless.
Of course.
Much like Chuck Norris himself was in his films.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Possibly...
His karate chop could stop the worst of the criminals.
Dead in their tracks.
Yeah.
Possibly lawbreakers themselves. I don't know about Chuck Norris's tax affairs, but that's possible.
Yeah, it is. Of course, we're not making any aspersions. This is purely hypothesis.
They prefer to... I never thought that we'd be talking about hypothesizing Chuck Norris tax affairs.
I actually genuinely love Chuck Norris, so yeah. I can't believe we're even going down this road. I'm feeling mortified.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
This is definitely off script.
Anyway, preferring to shoot rather than take prisoners, these guys did.
Yeah.
But of course they were brave.
Of course they were.
Honourable.
Sometimes.
Some of them. But as always, it comes down to the particular ranger, of course, whether they're good or bad. You know, there's always going to be some bad eggs, some black sheep.
Well, certainly one of the most famous early day Texas Rangers was John Coffee Jack Hayes.
Did he like coffee? Yes. Is that where he got the name?
Maybe he did. Yeah. He may well have liked coffee.
Seems like he might have done, yeah.
He formed Starbucks in... no, he didn't. He came to San Antonio in 1837 and within 3 years was named as... Ranger Captain.
Impressive.
Presumably given some kind of badge like a Cub Scout for that. You are the Ranger Captain.
Yeah, well, you want one.
Hayes built a reputation fighting marauding Indians and Mexican bandits.
Banditos.
An Indian who switched sides and rode with Hayes and his men called the young Ranger Captain Brave Too Much. Brave Too Much.
Kind of works,
the way the Indians
sentence,
works.
But,
yeah.
Could have done better.
I mean, there's never grammatically correct with the Indians, but, of course, they weren't called Indians. They were then. Of course, they're called Native Americans now. Right.
Do you want to drag the Native Americans through the dirt anymore, Matt, at all? I'm sweating.
God, okay.
I haven't had enough trauma over the past
three after me,
years.
And now me. And now me.
Anywho, right, so... Hayes' bravado... was too much for many a hostile Indian or outlaw. In dealing with persons such, deemed, you know, as like a threat to Texas, Hayes helped establish another ranger tradition, which was a sort of a toughness mixed with a reliance on the latest technology.
Now, I do think, Wayne, you'd like this bit, because, of course, you do like a bit of tech.
Yes, yes.
Who
wouldn't love a
Of
a,
the two of us, you are what we'd call the techie.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So what was their tech? Well, the Republic of Texas was one of the earliest customers of a New England gunmaker, a chap called Samuel Colt. Colt had invented a fragile .36 caliber 5-shot revolver, a weapon Hayes and his men used with deadly effect in the defence of the Texas frontier. No longer would his men have to pause in battle to reload single-shot pistols and rifles while the Native Americans continued firing arrows upon arrows upon arrows upon arrows at them.
Colt built his reputation on the use of his weapons by the Texas Rangers, actually. One of Hayes's men, Samuel H. Walker, made some suggestions for improving the pistol that Colt adopted during the Mexican War. A new weapon, the 5-pound frontier equivalent of a nuclear bomb in their hands, was called the Walker Colt.
Of course, a very famous gun. In 1846, a year of Texas admission to the 28th state of the Union, the United States and Mexico were at war. Walker joined one of the several ranger companies that were mustered into federal service to function as long-range scouts and would travel in deep into enemy territory.
And when they did, the rangers fought with such ferocity in the war, they came to be called Los Diablos Tejanos, which is the Texas Devils. Rightfully so, too. The luck Walker had after the war did not hold, however. He was killed in the fighting. For the next decade after the Mexican War, the Rangers existed primarily as volunteer companies, raised when the need arose and disbanded when their deadly work was done. In 1846, a crack desperado unit was sent to a Texas prison by a military court for a crime it didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Dallas Underground. Today, still wanted by the government for work, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire a band of bloodthirsty psychopaths called the Texas Rangers.
I'm getting on the plane.
So,
Drink some milk, B.A.
I'm not going to have my burger. You must have drunk my burger. So I'm going to have your burger. In fact, no, I'm going to have Harold's burger, and then you have my burger, and then...
eats the drunk burger.
And B.A.'s on the plane.
Yeah. That might be a bit confusing to any of our listeners.
Anyone
who's
not seen the A-Team, that is just basically Wayne having a spaz out.
Yeah, so let's swiftly move on. Okay, so by the second half of the decade, the biggest threat to Texas was lawless Texans.
Well, as it still is to this day. Well, Mexicans as well, of course. Can we say that?
Well, we just did.
Yeah.
So
Too late. Take it back.
Yeah. If Trump was in the room, he'd give you a high five.
Oh, no.
Okay, One of us.
No, I'm not one of his. Okay. I'll tell you that. Right.
In 1874, the legislature created two ranger forces to cope with the situation. And they were called the Frontier Battalion, led by Major John B. Jones, and an organisation called the Special Forces, under Captain Leander McNelly. In the following 5 years, the Rangers were involved in some of the most celebrated cases in the history of the Old West.
They are legends.
They are. Much of the fact that would later be mixed with Ranger legend occurred during this turbulent period. What happened, Matt?
Well, Texas' deadliest outlaw was, of course, the famous John Wesley Hardin.
Of course.
A preacher's son reputed to have killed 31 men, Wayne. Dear. 31 grown men. Was captured in Florida by Ranger John B. Armstrong. Armstrong, his long-barreled Colt .45 in his hand, boarded the train Hardin and his four companions were on. The outlaw Hardin shouted when he saw Armstrong,
"Texas by God!"
Strange thing to say, but okay.
An unusual quote. And drew his own pistol. When it was over, one of Hardin's friends was dead. Hardin had been knocked out cold with a cheeky little bunch of fives to the face. And his three surviving friends were staring at Armstrong's pistol. A neat round hole pierced Armstrong's hat, but he was uninjured.
Wow, and another well-known Texas outlaw who had a run-in with the Texas Rangers, did not make it to prison. Train robber Sam Bass and his vast gang, who had been in Texas since 1870, were confronted by four Texas Rangers in Round Rock in the summer of 1878. In the shootout that followed, one of Bass's gang was killed outright.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
We were happy with that.
Yeah, live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Absolutely, yeah.
Bass was gravely wounded, but managed to escape. He was found, taken back into town a bit later on, and he died there.
Yeah, yeah.
So job done. The Texas Rangers certainly found plenty of trouble wherever they went. Rangers contended with local disturbances that amounted to sort of miniature wars, really. Bloody feuds, lynch mobs.
Of course, the lynch mob's always at it.
Those damn cattle thieves again.
Bastards.
Barbed wire fence cutters, the buggers.
Yeah, yeah.
Killers and other bad men, contend with a lot of them. And the Rangers...
I'm sick of them, Wayne. I'm sick of them.
Well, the Rangers were sick of them, but they usually prevailed.
As it turns out, as the turn of the century approached, the reputation of the Ranger as the person required to take care of a situation beyond the means of local law enforcement was well established. Adjutant General W.H. Mabry wrote of the Rangers in his 1896 report on the to the Register that this branch of the service has been very active and has done incalculable good in policing the sparsely settled sections of the state where the local officers could not afford adequate protection. So when the shit goes down, call in the Ranger. That seems to be the answer.
Yeah, and of course, you can't talk about the Rangers, Matt, without talking about John Hughes.
Oh, John Hughes. If I had a penny for every time you mentioned to me John Hughes, I'd basically have one penny because it's the first time you mentioned him. No, no. Right. Of course we know about John Hughes.
Well, John Hughes, that's two pennies. he was a Texas Ranger and good old cowboy of the old Wild West was John. In May 1886, when thieves stole John's neighbour's horses, he was a civilian at the time, but he still pursued the band, killing two of the men in the process, and captured the remaining thieves in New Mexico territories. So this guy doesn't give up lightly. He returned all the horses to his neighbour.
What a hero. What a guy. What a guy. Ace Rimmer. What a guy. Yeah.
The pursuit lasted for several months.
I know.
Actually, it sounds like he's a bit obsessive, this guy.
He probably is, but you've got to be. Months. To be this good, you've got to be obsessive. Yeah.
And the word of... So, hang on a minute. So he
gave up his job.
Chased these guys
yeah.
for several months because they stole his neighbour's horses.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That is dedication, isn't it?
It's dedication. It's the dedication of a ranger.
Yeah.
Or that's the dedication
it's
you
danger,
need.
Yeah, it's the dedication of a ranger. Always just got OCD.
I have OCD.
But anyway, because of that, word of his exploits spread pretty fast, of course. People were just going, you know, 7 months? What? And soon reached renowned Texas Ranger, Ira Ayton.
Yeah, good old Ira Ayton. Yeah, he's renowned, of course.
And he asked Hughes for help in apprehending a very dangerous man, an escaped murderer called Judd Roberts.
Now, after Hughes tracked and shot the bandit, Ayton convinced Hughes to join the Texas Rangers. He thought this guy's basically...
Got what it takes.
I mean, he's done the big chase, hasn't he, for months on end, and he's killed this guy as well. After the 1893 murder of Texas Ranger Captain Frank Jones, he was killed during an ambush, basically, by bandits. Oh. Hughes led a group of rangers to hunt for the killers, most of whom were members of this Olgin family. Hughes managed to obtain the names of all bandits involved in the killing of his captain, 18 men in total.
Wow. And then he took his rangers and tracked down every single man on the list.
Well, he's not going to. This guy, we've already known already, he's relentless. He's not going to give up.
Yeah. And all of those guys, he either killed them in shootouts or hanged the buggers.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, he's a serious lawman, isn't he?
If you knew this, I mean, this guy's got to be what Clint Eastwood was based on, surely.
Strange to say that, Matt, because the daring actions of Hughes led to many books, actually, including, hello, what's this? The Lone Star Ranger.
Yeah, yeah, who became the Lone Ranger, of course.
Yeah, that was the inspiration, wasn't it?
Right, for Lone Star. Yeah.
Yeah, and...
Of course, Lone Star will always be, for me, back to good old Spaceballs. Lone Star.
You are the chosen heir.
No. So we've got Dark Helmet again, listeners. If you've not seen it, that won't make any sense.
So we've got two people now that could have inspired the Lone Ranger. This Hughes chap and our first Black Sheriff, Bass.
Yeah, of course. Another well-known ranger was Frank Hammer, who was one hard mother funster. Oh, yes. Oh, Grandmaster of the Bollocko, he was. He is quoted as saying,
"We're here to enforce the law, and the best way to do it is a Colt 45 to the good."
Can't argue with that.
And he practiced what he preached. By the time he ambushed and killed Bonnie and Clyde, he had already killed 53 people, been shot a staggering 17 times, been left for dead 4 times. He was a typical old school ranger.
Sounds like a bit of a tough nut. And to date, 105 rangers have died in the line of duty. May God rest their souls.
May God rest their wonderful souls.
Although that is fewer than 1% of the individuals have served in their ranks.
Cashback.
So they've been very successful. So what were these lawmen paid to do this service? Well, they were paid $1.25 a day with a $10 a month bounty in property. Rangers had to provide their own gun and horse and pants and chaps.
Yeah.
Let's just say you needed to love the work to do it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they got paid a lot, does it? I mean, you know, I don't know really what $1.25 in those times really meant, but it doesn't sound a lot, does it?
And, I think some of them probably managed to pocket a few bit of extra loot. Maybe commandeer that, take that back from the
corpse. Yeah, the dead corpse there. Oh, he had nothing on him. What, no money at all? But he's robbed a bank. No money at all, Gav.
No, he must have spent it all. Sorry.
Yeah. What's that new horse you got? Yeah, just got a new horse. Yeah. Want a drink? Yeah, sure.
It's on me.
So that brings us to the end of another podcast. And we hope it was an interesting look at the lawmen of the American West. We could not cover all the subjects we wanted to cover. In fact, I really wanted to cover the Pinkerton Detective Agency. Fascinating group of people, but we'll have to leave that for another day.
Well, that could deserve a small episode by itself, actually.
Fascinating. And they're still going today.
And many thanks to our noble and much-loved Patreons out there, of course. And to Maria Barber. Thanks, Maria. I think you've retweeted us as well.
Yeah, that's really appreciated, actually. Yeah, as always.
And for our listeners, we'd just like to say thank you again for lending us your ears. So we have quite a backlog of ideas in the tubes now, listeners. And what may be up next, Matt?
Well, interestingly, on Twitter, we always like to get, as we've said before, ideas of future podcasts. One listener, Mark J, has come up with Madam Ching.
Madam.
Now, that is a very interesting subject. And so,
very close to your heart.
Yeah, so we've started to work. So we're hoping to deliver Madam Ching as the next podcast. No promises, listeners. Also, other people have come up with Charlemagne, Joan of Arc, King, of course, Henry VIII.
Line them up.
Come up with some. If you've got some ideas of podcasts you'd like us to do, please let us know. So we will be doing a recommendation from a listener as our next podcast.
They all go on the list.
They'd go on to the great list.
So until next time, listeners, goodbye.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.
That's right.